This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury, still in the studio with Frida Liu. Joining us, of course, is Arvind Yuvaraj, DJ Shred, as he was called last week.
One of my dozen names.
One of your dozen names here on the show, of course. Folks, I'm going to give you a heads up now. If you want to get in touch with the show via Twitter, get us at BFM Radio or on WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. We've got some questions we might want to post to you a little bit later on. Stories today, though, revolving around how nice guys finish first. This is not fact, Frida. Come on.
This is fact. And of course, I saw this article this morning because I follow Ariana Huffington on LinkedIn, and this was a very interesting article. No, and so it says, in relationships and at work, nice guys really do finish last. And it gives me a warm feeling.
Last or first?
First.
See? Freudian, this is what I mean.
Freudian slip. Oh, my God. Anyway, hope for all of us in this room who are really nice people. Okay, I'm going to back this with facts, right? Anyway, so the idea of compassionate leadership is touchy-feely at best and bad management worse. So new research in this book, The Happiness Track, suggests that rather than making them look soft, acts of kindness and altruism increase leaders' standing in a group. In some contexts, altruism can translate into a serious competitive advantage. So she said, consider this, Joyce, right? You've got two individuals with equivalent talent and skills. Who do you look for to look up to and prefer to work with, promote or invite onto a project?
The nicest person.
The nicest person, right? The more compassionate person. I think when we say compassionate and nice, we're not, I don't think they're wimpy.
Right.
But that you care. I think that's where it's coming from, right? So Wharton Professor Adam Grant argues that kindness and compassion gives a far greater advantage than self-absorption. Really? Okay, so nice guys do finish first, explains, as long as they learn how to not let others take advantage of them.
Right.
So there's that, right? So he has a book called Give and Take, and he said here as well that people who care about others' well-being and look out for their colleagues and employees, the group Grant calls givers, are overrepresented at the bottom of the success ladder, and this is because often selfish takers mow them down. But here's a surprising finding. Grant also reveals that givers are overrepresented at the very top of the success ladder too. So
So nice guys are at the bottom and at the top.
At the bottom. So, and he says, how can that be? It turns out that people like and appreciate givers more. They therefore become more influential. So when givers learn strategies that prevent others from taking advantage of their altruism, their nice qualities end up helping them succeed above and beyond anyone else. In part because everyone loves working with them and appreciates them for their kind and giving qualities. And, you know, I mean, you remember a great boss. I'm sure you've had
for
one.
For sure, yeah.
Right? And you're willing to work harder for that person. You're going to do over and beyond because you like the person.
Yeah.
And you're going to
yeah.
do it because it's beyond work.
Yeah.
Right, Arvind?
It feels comfortable to be doing it. It doesn't.
Have you had a nice boss, Arvind?
Oh, yeah.
Be quick about that, Arvind. Yeah. Have you had a nice boss? Yes.
Immediate response.
But there's a really interesting thing about, a little bit later on, this whole thing about compassion and culture. When we see someone helping someone else, get an inspired, warm and fuzzy feeling. You may even shed a tear or feel a chill. Psychologist Jonathan Haidt has appropriately termed this state a state of being elevation. So in the workplace, elevation leads to increased loyalty. And in their research on this phenomenon, him and his colleagues found that when leaders were polite, respectful, sensitive, or willing to make sacrifices for their teams, their employees experienced elevation. So it's
cue you to song.
Right, exactly. But it's all about, do as I do, leading by example, I suppose. And when you've got somebody who's willing to do that and sacrifice, oh, I'm so tired, I've got to pick up my kids from school, I can't do this at the weekend, yeah, they still come back. And, they'll do what they need to do to get the job done. Mm. When you see that kind of
commitment,
yeah, yeah, it makes you feel I should be helping just as much in a positive way, right?
And just back to what Grant says as well. What happens in this case as well is that it increases the spirit of innovation.
Right.
He says when you respond in a frustrated, furious manner, the employee becomes less likely to take risks in the future because he or she worries about the negative consequences of making mistakes. So, in other words, if you kill the culture of experimentation, and that's critical to learning and innovation. So, if you're not a nice person and everything, so it's like I'm just gonna do what I'm told. Going to do what's necessary. I'm not going to think outside the box. I'm not going to do anything that will rock the boat, right? So when you have that spirit, people are like, okay, I think I won't get reprimanded for trying something new. I think it'd be great for the company.
Yeah. You know? All right, moving on to our next story. This is something slightly different, and it's coming out of a news piece that we got out of Australia about a particular cafe in Brunswick in Melbourne where they're charging an 18% gender gap surcharge. Right. I'll kick it off with that. And so it's a Melbourne cafe. They've caused a bit of a social media.
It's called a man tax.
It is. It's essentially a man tax. Mm-hmm. And it's not just for the girls, obviously. It's a vegan cafe in Brunswick said they're charging men 18% more in a bid to address the gender pay gap. The cafe, which clearly advertises its rules on a chalkboard, explained men will be charged a premium and the gap donated to women's services. However, it's in place once 1 week out of every month, and it's not compulsory. So you can turn up as a man and pay the 18% if you want to or not. Right. You know, but it's obviously caused a lot of mixed reaction over on Twitter. Some of them are, I'll give you a couple of examples. One is, love it, spaces for ladies is always great in highlighting the pay gap. Like, this is harder for people to ignore. Next one is, especially if it creates an environment where women feel safe. The pay gap, definitely worth talking about, but reckon much repulsive male vitriol comes from low-paid lads who can't work out why they've been blamed. Now, on the flip side of that, you have people who are saying, look, if it was the other way around, there'd be riots on the streets. And I think if you want to fight for equality, then surely treating everyone the same is the way to go. These are not my opinions. These are, you know, tweets. Somebody else is saying, not a fan, whilst appreciating that we're highlighting the issue of pay, creating an us and them is divisive. If you flip this, Twitter would be in flames.
Yeah.
Right? So clearly you both have an opinion on this. Let's go with Arvin first.
I'll let Arvin go.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if they're saying, like, you know, if this situation was flipped and stuff like that, but the thing is, the situation is never flipped.
Right.
I mean, it's
thank
not,
you, Arvin.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's not realistic to go if it was flipped. The
He's just pandering to his boss, you know. That's what it is.
I mean, they're going, like, if this was flipped, but if you think about it, the whole reason why this thing exists is because the situation is flipped in everywhere. This cafe is the exception
to
the whole, you know, the reality of it, right?
It's 1 week out of every month. It's not compulsory. And so far, no one has refused to pay the extra 18%.
Right. Right?
Maybe it's also a face thinger.
I think
You know, but that's the message they're trying to say, 18%, right? You want to get to the day where you don't have to pay the 18%.
Right. I mean, this is in Australia. I mean, what's the pay gap? What's the difference, the gender gap here? Do we know? Have we got figures on that?
We have. I can't remember them.
Like locally?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I can't. Yeah.
We had some earlier. Majida, you had some from, I'm just going to quickly pop you on the mic. Okay. You had some from Facebook earlier today, right?
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah. Facebook recently released a diversity report. And they found that 35% of people who work in Facebook are now women.
Wow, 35%.
Yeah, 35%.
Mm. Which will link nicely into our story in a couple of minutes,
which I think should be higher, but
it should be. But it's good, getting higher, slowly getting there.
But we have this story coming up after the break from a Google engineer who wrote that women may be unsuited for tech jobs, and of course the women wrote back as they should have done. Get in touch, folks. We are on WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or we're on Twitter at BFM Radio. Now we've got some music coming up. It is The Stripes with What a Shame. Don't go anywhere. Enterprise Biz Bytes, BFM 89.9.
Because feelings matter. BFM 89.9.
Welcome to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury, in the studio with
Frida Liu,
Arvin Yuvaraj.
Moving on to something ever so slightly different now. We've got a story.
Not very motivational Monday.
Not very motivational Monday, no, but it's a science-based story. Arvin, can you take the lead on this, please?
Yeah, so you know how when people go through organ transplants, they can be life-saving, but at the same time, also the biggest concern is whether your body is going to accept the new organ or not.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There are many times where we hear that a person has got a new organ, and then like 2 weeks later or 2 months later, sometimes the body rejects it, and then they go into shock, and all sorts of bad things happen. So these researchers at Yale, what they've done is they've discovered a clever solution to this, and they want to sort of trick your body into not noticing that the organ is there until it completely settles in.
How does that work?
So they're using nanoparticles. What they've done is they've developed a drug delivery system that uses nanoparticles to slowly supply small interfering RNA. RNA is basically, it acts as a messenger that carries instructions from DNA that controls the synthesis of proteins.
Yeah.
So they want to send in like small interfering RNA that stops your body's white blood cells from attacking the organ as a foreign presence.
Oh, so you're tricking your body into saying, "Don't worry, there's nothing here.
Yeah,
nothing look here. The other way.
Nothing to see.
Yeah,
nothing
yeah.
To
so
see.
It's, move along,
move along." It's basically telling it that it's completely okay and everything is as it should be.
Right.
So that your body doesn't notice it until the organ is completely settled in and everything's working properly, and then the siRNA sort of stops. So it lasts for about 6 weeks. This whole process. They say that it might not eliminate the rejection process, but it could be far easier to control when it kicks in. So if the rejection process kicks in, they can use these nanoparticles to sort of tame the effects, I guess,
right.
Using siRNA. They also say that you can customize the nanoparticles to achieve a specific effect, such as carrying more of the drug. So that if it needs to, if the dosage is not enough, then you can sort of tweak with these nanoparticles, and you can make sure that the body is, you know, is completely okay with this new organ that's in there.
I'm interested to know if this is just limited to organs or things like hands, feet, that kind of stuff. Because I remember reading about a boy. Fairly recently, actually, he'd had a multiple hand transplant. He was born without hands, and he'd been they transplanted hands onto him, and it had been something like about four years until his body finally, you know, accepted the fact that it was constantly infected and in so much pain all the time, and it looked horrendous. So something like this, you know, I'd imagine, would have been great for him.
Yeah, so you're meaning like full-blown limbs.
Yeah.
They say they want to test it out on kidneys first. Oh. So they say that the next focus is applying this system to kidney transplants, and then it's going to be a long, long time before it can be used on like other major organs. But that's the first thing. Because I guess kidney transplants are the most common.
Yeah.
You know, and there's always a shortage of stuff like this. And then there's also the story that we had last week. They're also focusing on that, how to make artificial organs. So growing like organs in the lab so that you can customize the organs for a person from the get-go.
Right.
So that's another way to go about it. Or I mean, even, you know, just make organs and then put it in the body and make sure that nothing goes wrong.
This is like, you know, these conversations we've been having recently, you know, about growing organs and growing eyes and having stories
about... In the backyard.
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, and like having stories about being able to replace a guy's eyesight digitally and all.
Oh, yeah.
This has all happened within like the last month. And these are conversations and discussions I would never have imagined would have happened in my lifetime.
Yeah.
And yet here we are.
I mean, like even 5 years ago, we wouldn't be, you know, thinking that we were talking, but there is so many advancements in this field.
I mean, 10 years ago, we were complaining about how slowly our internet downloaded pictures, you know.
The dial-up sound.
Even still, in parts of KL right now, people still suffer the same problem. Right.
Yeah. So our colleague, like Majida was saying outside before the show that, you know, whether the rejection process is something that's needed for the body, like you were mentioning something like that, right?
Yeah, I was wondering if, because sometimes if the body rejects an organ, it could be a sign for something bigger. So maybe that rejection is necessary. It's, I guess, the question then of detecting the rejection really early so that we can do something about it, so that it doesn't affect something else bigger down the road.
Yeah.
When you mean it's often a sign of something bigger, what do you mean by that, Majida?
I mean, it could be that if a kidney is rejected, maybe something else is wrong, maybe with the blood or organs around it. And rejecting the kidney and getting rid of it quickly could prevent other infections or something bigger down the road.
Right.
Yeah, so maybe there's a reason for it, right?
Yeah. You know, I mean, sometimes you hear how, you know, people don't carry their babies to full term, and it's usually the first 3 months, you know, that, you know, you actually miscarriage or whatever. Sometimes it's just the body saying that this is not going to be a healthy fetus.
Right.
I mean, as much as we don't like to hear that, sometimes it's just the body saying, you know, it's not gonna.
Now's not the right time.
Now it's not the right time, you know.
Yeah. So, you know, I was thinking, none of us are medically trained.
Dr. Liu,
Dr. Liu, Dr. Richard, Dr. Majida. You know, so I would get confused between like surgical tools and gardening tools, right? So, but I'm pretty sure there are people listening who have you know, gone to school and done like 7 years, and they can tell the difference between like a spade and a stethoscope.
Someone can WhatsApp us now.
Someone can WhatsApp us.
Medical advice.
Tell us if this makes any sense. If this would be like a long-term solution, if what Majida is saying, you know, has any a way to it, like how would that work? Does the rejection process have any positive use on the body? So they can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. That's 018-789-8899, or just tweet us at BFM Radio and let us know.
Lovely. We're going to move on now. Some music coming right up from the Four Tops, followed by a little bit of John Lennon. We're going backwards in time. You are listening to Enterprise BizBytes on BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bites. My name is Rich Bradbury, joining the mic by
Frida Liu.
And Arvind Viraj.
And down in the studio with
Majida Hashim.
So we said at the top of the show,
Ramuhipa.
Yay.
Okay. Yeah.
We said at the top of the show, we got a whole bunch of stories for you. One lined up right now. A Google engineer wrote that women may be unsuited for tech jobs, and the women wrote back.
They wrote back. So this is coming from an engineer at Google, right? So the essay reported by Motherboard and posted by Gizmodo was posted on an internal Google forum by a male software engineer, obviously, titled Google's Ideological Echo Chamber. So he said that... So he has not been publicly identified, but his words have sparked a backlash, obviously.
Yeah. Right.
So critics say his sentiments reflect a tech company culture that's unwelcoming or even hostile to women and minorities. Another fear, the engineer's words reflect the unspoken thoughts of many others in an industry dominated by white men.
Yeah. What do you want me to say? I mean, I cannot apologize for enough.
So...
So,
as for comment, Google, which has announced efforts to increase diversity and is being investigated over allegations of gender pay inequality, directed by the Washington Post, an intern response to employees by Daniel Brown, the company's new VP of Diversity, Integrity and Governance. She said that, the engineer's essay argues that Google should stop its campaigns to increase gender and racial diversity and focus instead on ideological diversity.
Now, how would that help?
It says the reason women don't make up half of the company's technological and leadership positions because of genetic differences in their preferences and abilities.
Oh, come on.
Back to the days when women aren't allowed to vote.
Right.
Majida. Genetics, right?
Come on, Majida, you must have got something here. Come on.
I've got here more from Facebook's diversity report, right? Mm. So according to this report, women now represent 35% of the social network's overall workforce and is up 33% from 2016. Where tech positions are concerned, women have yet to crack 1/5. Okay, they are only 19% of women in their tech positions, but it's an improvement from 2016, where they held 17% of the stats only.
I mean, this is something we've talked about quite a lot, right? Mm-hmm. Women in tech and the lack of women in tech, and why is there this lack of women in tech?
I think it's just things that we grew up on, right? Boys should do this, girls should do this. Maybe there's still a lot that going on. I mean, what Google's trying to do, they have coding camps for girls. So they're trying to break the stereotype. But here's another very interesting thing as well. The author says the company's diversity efforts have created a politically correct monoculture that maintains its hold by shaming dissenters into silence and makes it easier for extremist and authoritarian policies to take root. So that's also kind of worrying. But at the same time, we always talk about freedom of expression. So there's that fine line as well.
Right. Do we think, though, amongst us here in the room, that these quotas work? Do we honestly think that? I mean, if we want a whole amount of women, if we want to bring that number up, and you have to hire women to do that, to bring up your quota.
I don't know if you... I guess the idea is have to hire... I'll tell you one thing. We have a lot of unconscious bias.
Right.
So I think the fact that you put a number there and then we're now conscious about it, just even simple things like organizing BFM events from the early days, right? It was just very, I thought of this person. And even myself would just think of a man and someone said, how come you don't have enough women? It's like, whoa. It just is unconscious bias. And if you just take a little bit of one step more, it's like, there is a woman represented in this field. It's just that there is this unconscious bias until we put it out there. I think we need to move in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, I think it's like they're saying that they have to up the numbers and stuff. I don't think you should hire like a man or a woman to up any kind of numbers. You should just hire them if they are skilled enough for the job.
But isn't that the problem since the first start? Hasn't that been the problem?
No. I think the whole problem this situation is because there are people like this guy who is unnamed but has been exposed.
Right.
Because if, let's say, he's on top and he's like doing the hiring process and then he gets like 10 guys who are interviewing and then 10 women. If you have a bias like this, he's going to choose the majority from the guys, even if the women are equally or more skilled.
Go ahead. This guy says that he has received support from others in the company for bringing up these very important issues, which others would never have the courage to say or defend because of our shaming culture and the possibility of being fired. Now, I just want to read a couple of comments from the women who have responded. If HR does nothing in this case, I'll consider leaving this company for real for the first time in 5 years. There's another one said, there are many people at Google who share this guy's views. They do peer performance reviews and interview people. They discriminate. So that's worrying, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm. I mean, and another one, so, you know, we have to do this constantly, assumed incompetent until proven otherwise, over and over and over. It's exhausting. It must be. Yeah.
I mean, you know, this is going back to the thing about the cafe before this when we spoke, like the Twitter responses where they said, if the situation is flipped, this is exactly it. It's forever flipped.
Yeah.
And the one time when it's not is that cafe. So the norm is for things like this to happen where there's always inequality in the workplace, right? And, you know, they're trying to fix it. It's a good thing that this guy got exposed, but the part where he's unnamed is also kind of iffy because we don't know if any action is being taken against him because there's no name to the face.
Right. Yeah. Interestingly,
no face to the names.
I think BFM, there's a higher proportion of women.
Slightly.
Slightly, right?
Yeah, we were working hard to get it to 50-50 for the men to come in. So I think we've achieved that.
I think so. Right, time for a very short break. When we come back, some of the events or event that you should be attending this week. We've got some music. It is Cut Off Your Hands with Still Fond coming up right now, followed by a little bit of the Foo Fighters with Learn to Fly here on BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. It's almost time for us to wrap up with Frida Liu, Arvind Yuvaraj, and of course, Majida over here. We've got one more thing to talk about before we disappear. It's the network series, continuation tomorrow, right?
Yes, it's happening tomorrow. It's going to be at Imaginarium. We've got Pat Liu from British India. Did you know that the company has been around for, oh, I don't know, close to 40, but she's got 40 outlets in four countries. Mm.
I did not know that.
I know. And of course, we've got Edmund, is that Lim from...
Edmund Tan
from Insight Scoop. They've got about 9 outlets as well.
Okay. So you can hear what they have to say about their retail business and how it's faring in this economic environment. Yuvin, you were there. Yuvin. Arvind.
That's a new one, right?
Yeah.
It's a new one.
Let's just add that to the list, shall we?
Yeah.
You were there at the last network event. How did it go?
Last week's. Oh, it was good. I mean, if for anyone who hasn't been to one of these events, you should attend because it's a much cozier space, and then you get
more intimate,
and then there's really good food, and then you get to like mix and mingle with the people who are on stage. Like last week we had Dato' Amir Ali Maidin, and then we also had serial entrepreneur Rowan Sian, so both of them were there. And then it gives you a chance to sort of ask them questions that you may not be able to ask them during our bigger events,
right?
Yeah.
What were the kind of questions that were being asked at the last event? Can you remember?
Oh yeah, because I was asking the questions.
Yeah, exactly.
But, no, but the retail figure says 7.5% growth, although it's not as high as the previous years. And I asked him, is that a real reflection in your business? And
right.
He said, well, you know, it really isn't for most of them. But again, they're in different industries, right? Because Dato' Amir is in hypermarkets and all that.
And Rowan is in everything.
Rowan's in everything. Mm. Yeah, and I guess he's trying to sell the lifestyle experience. You know, he's got his co-working space, he's got his juices, he's got his... you know, other fields,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So he's got all that happening. So it's just, I guess, he's moving in a different direction. If you talk to Dato' Amir, he says it's about focus and staying committed to what your business is. And Rowan's got the exit strategy plan.
Right.
So he's got two differing views. No right, no wrong, but where you're coming from. And I guess like when you come in listening to that session, and tomorrow I'm sure we'll bring this up as well. Where do you want, if you come into business, what's your plan? Is it to stay in it for the long term and diversify or in one area, or is it to with an exit strategy in mind?
Right. So to reiterate then, this is kind of your final chance if you want to come along to tomorrow's event. Mm-hmm. It's the Network Series number 11, The Retail Landscape, with Pat Liu of British India and Edmund Tan of Inside Scoop, happening tomorrow between 6 and 9.30 p.m. at the Imaginarium at One Otama. If you want tickets, they are 63 ringgit. Where can we get tickets from?
BFM.my/networkseries.
Yay! There we go. All right, so to wrap up the show then, let's cover some of the stories we went through. Frida, you started off with...
Nice guys really do finish first.
Yeah. She got it wrong the first time around. Mm-hmm. And then we moved on to the Handsome Her Cafe, how they are charging 18% man tax if you want to attend. Mm-hmm. We then spoke about... what was the other one? Oh, yes, Google and the tech jobs, right?
Nanoparticles.
Nanoparticles.
About the organs first. researchers are using nanoparticles to make sure your body doesn't reject certain organs. I think that's today's word, nanoparticles.
Nanoparticles, yeah, word of the day. Yeah? Mm. I'm finishing up, of course, with women who were working at Google, and a Google engineer speaking his mind, of course, and then a whole bunch of women wrote back and said, "You got it wrong, fella." Something along those lines. Anyway, time for us to wrap up. Coming up after the 1 o'clock news, it is His Excellency AJM, Muzamil High Commissioner of Sri Lanka. He was on the grill this morning. Malaysia is one of Sri Lanka's major trade partners with a trade surplus of over 2.5 billion ringgit. The High Commissioner discussed how the country is open for business and the relationship it shares with China, India and Malaysia. That's all coming up right after the 1 o'clock news. On behalf of myself, Richard Bradbury,
Frida Liu,
Arvind Yuvaraj,
and Majida Hashim,
we're going to say goodbye, and we will be back tomorrow, of course, same time, same place, at noon. Meanwhile, let's play some music. It is the Bluebells with Young at Heart here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.